is Aiden Kramer. Aiden is from Deer Street, and Aiden heard that you just got back from
Anybody the first year.
just sheer panic. This is a little bit too hard. Because of the problems first did on their diagnostic quiz. And they want to know if there's any hope in the world. Let me tell you about grading, of course. We can talk about grading, but it is not. What the priority is in this course is for learning. And what we need to be concerned about is learning. Part of the reason for the diagnostic quiz is to wake up those folks who thought they were doing what they were supposed to be doing and found out they're not. They're going to wake up now and they did turn it back. And so I told you that I was going to ask you in ways that you can get to ask yourself before necessarily. But you will see as you go through the new exercise that you have not everything you've done. What's important to recognize is not what that score is. If you did really poorly on that quiz, that's a good thing. Okay? Why is it a good thing? It's a good thing because we have a lot to learn from the exercise. We have a lot to learn from going through the remediation exercise. And most of what you will learn, as I told you yesterday, has nothing to do with the theology. It has to do with the learning guide. It has to do with reading the questions. It has to do with actually answering the questions that were asked instead of what it is that you decided to answer regardless of what was asked. So, what do I do about grading? Well, your goal is 75%. What makes sense is that you're building a foundation and that you're making progress in doing that. So I expect that on each quiz, I expect to see some improvement. And the way that I look at that is I say, okay, how is the class doing? How is the class as a whole? Do I look at the mean? Can I look at the deviations from the mean? Those people who are at the mean or above, I don't really, they're fine. I don't worry too much about them. Those people who are above 1.5 standard deviations below the mean, I generally don't worry about. They're part of that pack. Statistical basis. And so the people I worry about are the people who are below 1.75 standard deviations below the mean and below two standard deviations.
What
is that? Yeah.
Can you give us that number? I
want to
know how far into the worry I am.
Well, if you look at the remedial exercise, it says on there what the mean was and what the standard deviation was. So you multiply the standard deviation by 1.75 or subtract the standard deviation from the mean and then subtract 3/4 of the standard deviation from the mean and that gives you some. Someplace, but this is not the time to worry about because this is just the first opportunity to do so. And if in fact people stay in the same position with relation to the class, then they are really moving up in their learning and stuff because each exam, now you have exams, now you have exams, of course, each exam. It's a little more challenging. And life is intuitive, so each exam draws on things from the beginning of the year. And in the respiratory system, and in the GI system, and into our executive. And our new
You're on the path. Wait a minute. You're on a path where you're growing and you're making good foundation, so that I can be assured that next year, when you see this same stuff again in PATH and in Twin Lab and all those other places, you're going to continue to build. So it's not necessary that you have all the facts and all the little details about physiology when you get done with this course. What's important is that you have a foundation. You can begin to think about systems, analyze systems, so that I can be assured that you're going to continue to grow. Are there people who fail the course? Occasionally there are. Are there people who get PC? Yes. So what's remediation? Generally, the remediation may be some assignments that are aimed at the areas that you're not doing well in or that you have to come up to speed with. Sometimes there are other kinds of things. Very seldom do I give a second exam. Because that's, in my mind, what we're trying to do. What I'm trying to accomplish, lots of times that's not a question. That amount? Question?
Aaron answered it for me. Thank you.
Okay. Any other questions, points about that? Concerns about that? For what? For the end of the quarter? Well, you have until Monday to do this remediation exercise. If you PC the course, generally you have to be end of the quarter. Unless there's some reason for this difference. Now, on your midterm grade, you have, at the end of fall quarter, I have to submit a grade for the registrar. So, in this course, at the end of fall quarter, there are three grades. One grade is an IV, which is an independent grade that says you're doing this wrong. One grade is a PC, but that's a mid-course grade. Okay? So what we do in that situation is go over your midterm, see where the problems were, you need some extra work, do some extra work. And the final grade of the course is the end of winter quarter. So lots of people don't do well on the midterm. They do just fine, because now they've got an idea of how they want to learn, they've got an idea of what the course is about, things are starting to click and make sense. They have no problems or very few problems in winter quarter. So if you have two fine winter quarter, you've got a PC. PC is erased, it becomes an AC. You get an AC at the end of the quarter. There are occasional times, and I haven't met anybody in this class yet, where by the performance that you have, it will seem to me that you're really having a hard time making sense of things, and I think it would be better for you in terms of progressing to get a new start next year. So I would tell you, occasionally, man, you may get an IP, an in-progress grade, during the fall quarter, and don't do anything worthwhile with the quarter, and you have a trend that's going the wrong way. You may get an IP and decide for some reason or another to leave. Okay, we're going to have a student join us next quarter who last year took fall quarter, and she decided she was going to go to Arizona. And when she got to Arizona, she decided her IP, the transcript says that she was staying gone with an AC, because she's finished that half of the course, she'll come back and finish the second quarter, next quarter. And occasionally, depending on how she feels and the time of other things, she's welcome to come back and sit in the class if she wants. And same with you. Next year in the middle of PATH, nobody ever does it except occasionally. Middle of that, or any other time in the future, decide you want to come back and sit in at any particular time with any particular topic you want to welcome. Okay? Getting up with that,
part of our community.
I guess I just put a
missing point.
Oh, that you're inviting people from past classes into our class.
Oh, in order to do that, you have to give permission for them to be here. As okay. any other time that we've had somebody come in, except for Frank, and I gave permission. Generally, if somebody comes in and wants to sit in, I'll ask you if that's okay. So that's consistent. Anything else?
How do you say chest?
Onward! Cardiac cycle. Any questions?
I've been wondering that all day. Mine says one. This is January 3rd. I think it's a 12.
January 3rd.
Oh, it's 11.
That would be when we talked about it back
there. No, last year. Early this year. Alright, cool. You got histology out of those.
So we finished discussing this case a little bit. Are there questions about the case?
I'd like to go over what we said about it.
Okay.
Not me.
Oh!
I like somebody okay. else to go over it.
Can I make...
You want somebody to tell me what this is all about.
I don't know. All about.
No, it's all about. But I remember...
Okay, wait a minute. What did you learn during the retreat?
The hokey pokey is what it's all about. Okay, go ahead.
Now, there's the, in comparing it with how the heart normally functions, there is a large difference in pressures between the left ventricle and the aorta.
Systolic pressure, we have to talk about what that means. Systolic pressure in the ventricle is 170, so the peak pressure during contraction was 170, and the aorta was only 120. Normally, we expect it to be very close together. Go ahead.
And so, it looks like the left ventricle had an increased pressure than it normally does, and the aorta has a decreased pressure. So we have assumed that one of the valves, of the aorta probably creating more resistance. And I think we had compared that to our flow model that the pump was pumping harder and there was increased resistance. The pump was pumping harder and the flow was decreased or the pressure. I don't know, I'm trying to compare it to our general model.
So let's not compare it to the general model. Let's use the general model. And the general model says to us that a flow depends on the gradient and resistance. Okay. And so the gradient at this point in time, the gradient is the difference between this 170 and that 120. And we expect there to be a very little resistance in that valve, and so we really expect the gradient not to be that big. But it is big. So that's like we did on the mass and heat flow tutorial thing, where we crimped the hose a little bit. So the analogy is, gee, you know that opening is smaller. And I would rather say, not that we assume that that was the case, but we hypothesized that that was the case. We predicted that that was the case. Because
because now the next question is there any evidence on this trace that would support that?
I'm somewhat confused. It looks like the left ventricular volume like falls pretty quickly, and the aortic pressure doesn't even seem like it's rising all that rapidly compared to the ventricular pressure. Why wouldn't it be that the valve is just open? And
because if the valve was open,
it wouldn't have that much pressure.
Then if the valve was open and had very little resistance, then the pressure in the ventricle and the pressure in the aorta would be very close together.
But I realize that part, but it seems like that second part doesn't match up quite as much.
What do you mean the second?
The volume seems to drop.
The volume seems to drop. The volume is dropping fairly rapidly, perhaps. But how much is it dropping compared to what we might normally expect? So let's go back for a minute.
These are good questions. The thing to think about.
And so what we saw here is that the volume is dropping from 160, from about 150 down to 70. Okay? During this systolic period, dropping from 150 down to 70. But how much force is causing it to drop? What's the driving pressure?
Not a lot.
Maybe a couple millimeters of mercury.
This is a lot.
So the difference is
between the solid curve and the dotted curve, the aortic dotted curve. Because if I'm standing in the ventricle.
This difference.
I mean, I'm standing in the ventricle. Mary Allison is in the aorta. Pressure around her is nearly the same as the pressure around me. There's a clear path here. If the path narrows, then there's a whole lot of the energy in the molecules that are by me being lost before they get to their analysis. In the muscle. So right here, the pressure right here is where the ventricle starts contracting, right? Right here is where the pressure in the ventricle becomes greater than the pressure in the aorta, and what happens? The valve opens. Okay. But flow doesn't go through there as quickly. And if flow isn't going through there as quickly, then what happens? How quickly is the volume leaving? Not as quickly. But what is the wall doing? It's still contracting. How long is that wall going to contract? Until repolarization, until calcium goes out. So regardless of what's going on up here, the contraction is going to start here, and the relaxation is going to start here. So if we look at what's going on, we look at what's going on now in terms of the muscle, what do we see? We see that with that big resistance, pressure is increasing, and it continues to increase because even though the valve is open, it's difficult for flow to go through the valve. There's a lot of resistance. And so that contraction, a lot of that contraction, still produces more pressure. Okay? And not so much movement. Some movement, but not so much movement. And so we still get out that volume. So why is that volume? Here this is going from 100 from 100 to 20, it's putting out 80 milliliters of blood in a stroke. And we said normally it was going to go from 150 to 70, right? 80 milliliters. Well, gee, it's putting out about the same amount, isn't it?
Somebody's still alive.
So why is it putting out the same amount? Why is the flow the same when the valve is narrowed? Because you're increasing the pressure. You're increasing the driving force. So the flow doesn't stay the same. Or the flow is, I'm putting out the same amount of volume because I've got a much bigger gradient. Instead of pushing out 120, something very small for a relative
pressure.
So what's
the qualitative difference
that
I'm talking about in the volume?
About the time of ventricular contraction. When we talk, in our next discussion of arterial pressure, we're going to talk about systole versus systolic pressure. It's going to have a very different meaning for us. But not a very different meaning, but a somewhat different meaning. But when we talk about systole and diastole, in terms of the ventricle, we're talking about contraction of the ventricle, relaxation of the ventricle. So what Megan is saying is that, gee, you know, in this one, the flow goes out fairly rapidly, and then there's not much of a change here. But in the other guy, there was flow happening all the way until that valve closed. And a lot relative to the flow. The slope here is much flatter than the design. The reason for that is that what? There's that resistance. That resistance holding that back. And so flow continues, more flow continues during the whole cycle, during that whole contraction and beginning relaxation, than it does normally. Make sense?
So basically there's more...
Is it just coincidence, or is this that the drop is about the same in the aortic pressure, or is the pressure going to build, like, I mean, just the amount of drop is going to be that here we're seeing about 80, or in the volume. In the volume.
Here we're seeing about 80, and the other one we're seeing about 80, so that is... In terms of comparing this case to normal, that's coincidental, because if there was more, you have to ask whether if there's more stenosis, if there's more resistance during the time that contraction takes place, how high can the pressure go to result in that kind of flow? Now you realize there's nothing in this game, there's nothing in this pump that's measuring the flow output. The flow is just a result of whatever the pressure gradient is and resistance. So the reason that this is 80 and the normal was 80 is more of a coincidence of the circumstance.
So something else besides the volume, and if you were asking what else supports our hypothesis.
Right.
Thank you.
know that because of the last sentence above there, or would you know it because of other things? Because of other things. Because in our life experience, we know that a flow goes through a narrow passage. There's a lot of noise. There's a lot of turbulence. So that helps me. That helps me decide that, yeah, well, gee, there's turbulence. What would cause turbulence? Well, I'd have turbulence if there's a fast flow going through a narrow tube. So that supports our hypothesis. Other questions?
Why is the left ventricle volume lower than in the normal circumstance?
Why is the left ventricular volume lower than the normal circumstance?
Like the peak is at 100 and the depression is at about 20. In normal, it's what, it's about 150 to 70. So why is there a difference?
Good. you could look at the next case and then take a break. So I'll tell you what. You decide what you want to do with your group, and we'll start talking about this case in 5 minutes.
We just talk about it in a break.
We can talk for 10 minutes and take a break, or you can talk for 5 minutes and take a 5 minute break, you can talk for another 5 minutes, take another 5 minutes, or you can take a 5 minute break and talk for 10 minutes.
All of the above.
It's
because the ventricular pressure is lower than the atrial pressure. How do I know that from where we're standing? If we're standing right here and you're watching the dotted line,
the
AV is feeling the solenoid. So if that line is above that line, that valve must be open, then there must be flow going in.
A large stick.
This is blood going fast and going fast
to your brain.
Right. Okay. What do you see at? So we're right here. Somewhere there. No, she said the valve was closed, but she changed her mind. We had a commercial. We came back to the reporter. She said, "Oh no, wait a minute. I believe the valve was open." So if you're standing here, what do you see happening? You look towards her, what do you see?
I
see blood coming towards her.
Just gotta make sure it down.
Now, if you look toward Katie, what do you see? A closed valve. Why do you see a closed valve? The pressure that Amy is experiencing is lower than the pressure that Katie's experiencing. Katie, if you look downstream, what do you see up? Is it lingering? So it's going toward Dawn and Shandy. Okay, and so what's happening to the pressure around here? What's happening to it?
Oh, it's getting lower.
It's getting lower. Why?
Sending
no, you're not sending this. Because you can put a stamp on it. It's going. It's going because there's a pressure gradient. All right, that's good. Okay, so this makes sense, right? This makes sense. And now let's go right here. Staying right here. And oh, I don't know if the valve is closed yet. The valve is closed right here. But now, so you're just seeing the valve is closed. Right? Just now. And why? Started out. I said, what caused it to open? She said, I feel this pressure. I said, what caused it to close? And she said, I don't feel this pressure. But she felt this pressure. So pressure caused it to open. Pressure on this side was greater than pressure on that side to open. What caused it to close? Pressure caused it to close. Pressure on this side was greater than that side. Okay? Make sense? So what must have happened? What must have happened around Amy to cause that downstream pressure to increase more than the atrial pressure? What must have happened at this point to cause the pressure around Amy, the ventricular pressure, to increase? Must have been contraction.
Exactly.
So now, if you look toward the aorta, what do you see? You see the valve open right here?
It's closed. It's closed out.
What are you asking?
Pressure is higher than
the aorta. Pressure is still higher here than it is where you are. So what happens to the valve? It's still closed. Okay? And if Katie looks downstream, what do you see happening?
Blood moving towards Shandy.
Blood moving towards Shandy. And what's happening to the pressure around you?
It's decreasing.
It's decreasing. All right. Right here. So if you're looking right there, And Amy, what's happening around you? Increasing pressure. And if you look up toward Katie, what do you see? You see Katie. Oh, and why do you see Katie? Because of Albo. Well, that looks pretty good. Okay. Katie, what do you see? I see, okay. So there's volume decreasing in the ventricle. All right. Why do you see that? All right. Now let's do something that's a little bit different than we did before. And we have communication between Amy and Katie. So and both of them are holding some very interesting apparatus that measures the pressure around them. And I guess maybe this pressure measuring device has a voice simulator in it, and they have something in their ear, and the voice simulator is telling them the pressure. Because it's very clear if they had a pressure gauge in their hand, what could they find out? What could they find out?
Pressure.
Could they find out the pressure?
Oh, yes.
So imagine you're standing in a sea of blood, and in your hand you have a gauge. Can you see it?
No.
No! So instead we have some new high-tech stuff, and that pressure measurement is being transmitted to your ear. And you can hear it from your ear. So now, Katie says to Amy, what's the pressure around you? And Amy says, oh, it's about 70 millimeters of mercury. And Katie listens to her ear, and she hears that the pressure is 68, 69 millimeters of mercury.
Is there any time to
live
due to sound traveling?
No.
Just checking.
These are very short distances.
Okay.
It doesn't have to go all the way back to the studio and then be transmitted. It's okay, it's great. And so what do you guys say? Is everything working the way you expect it to work? No, why not? Between the ventricle and between you two. Is everything working the way you expect it to work? Yeah. Well, that looks good. And now we talk the yacht again. What does the yacht see happen? Oh, there's more pressure. And is the pressure increasing? Yeah. And why do you think that pressure is increasing? Why do you think the pressure is increasing? Well, because of what? There's an increase in volume. Where do you think the volume is coming from? The ventricle. Why do you think the volume is coming from the ventricle?
That's where volume comes from.
Oh, but volume also comes from communication.
Yeah, but if you look at the regular one, even though there's still blood coming in, it doesn't go that high.
Okay. You look at the regular one, it doesn't come that high. Okay.
And that's the normal.
Why else do you think maybe it's coming from the ventricle?
Well, the ventricle is supposed to be—it's supposed to be shut at that point, but the pressure is increasing. But that's where the pressure in the ventricle is increasing, so it's probably forcing blood from there still now. Because if that valve closes, otherwise you don't get backflow into that area. So it's probably coming from the ventricle.
Okay. So what she just said was, I think. I'm sorry.
Yeah. Right. It's one directional.
Okay, another piece of evidence.
So the other thing is on the volume, going back to what we saw last time when there was a valve problem, we don't have the isovolumetric period in here. It's like there's no point where it's the same volume as the ventricle, which means that there's a pressure somewhere. And since the communication says that everything's going good between the ventricle and the aorta, it would suggest that the other valve is having problems.
Okay, great.
says is, in the end, what she expected to see was up here, she expected in this period of time the volume not to change. And yet she's seeing a volume change. At the same time, there's a pressure change in the atrium. The other thing I guess you could say is, if Yad is listening to this communication, and Amy says, the pressure's increasing, the ventricle is contracting. And Yad says, my God, the pressure well is increasing. At the same time, this ventricle is contracting. What must be happening? Where must this flow be coming from? It must be coming from the ventricle. So, let's go back and think about how can the flow go from the ventricle to the atrium when the ventricle is contracting if the valve is closed?
There's a hole.
What's the conclusion? It's not closed.
Right. It's leaky.
That's the hypothesis. That the valve somehow was not closed. The valve between the atrium and the ventricle is not closed. What other evidence do you have on that data? How do you support that? The sound. Where do I hear sound? During ventricular contraction, I hear sound. And what might cause that sound? Turbulence around the valve, forcing blood back into the atrium. Is there anything else? Somebody have hands? Does everybody say the same thing? Yeah.
Just the pressure for both the ventricular and aortic pressure during the contraction aren't as high as normal.
Because
the pressure is being exploded, so the flows right back into the atrium.
Okay. She says here, these pressures are not as high as I would expect them to be. And what does that tell? Why isn't the aortic pressure as high as you expect it to be?
Atrial pressure is high.
Because?
Your atrial pressure is high.
No. Because there's not as much volume coming from the ventricle. Why isn't there as much pressure built up in the ventricle? Because it's leaking back, and so there's flow out to the regions where there are gradients. There's one gradient here from the ventricle to the aorta. There's also another gradient from the ventricle to the atrium. That makes sense.
Yes.
Okay. Alright. Is there anything else on there that might suggest to you that in fact this problem is a problem with the AV valve? Between this volume and that volume, there's a huge amount of volume change. And look at this, is up at 300. What did we see before? About 120, right? 120. So how much you explain, is that consistent with what you suggest the problem might be? Have to get it out to the body. Because that's the rule. Well, maybe you do lose fingers and stuff.
Well, you could if you only had 120 milliliters of pressure, or milliliters of volume at a time, but because we're splitting it between two places, we have to half of it's going to the aorta and half of it's going back into the atrium to increase the only way you can keep the amount of blood flow to the body constant is by doubling the volume of the ventricle.
an interesting thought. The implication is somewhere by measuring the volume of the system to make sure that the amount of flow that I have going to the periphery is a normal level. Do I have any of those kinds of volume sensors?
Maybe.
What do I have?
Pressure sensor.
Okay. So now, the interesting thing that I found is that with no more data than what we're given, we came to a conclusion that half the volume is going to the atrium and half the volume is going to the atrium. How do you know it's not 20% to 80%? Or 60% to 40%? Or 40% to 60%?
Half was just the generalization that I make because we know that our normal is about 120 and 300 is roughly twice as much, so I just figured that it was good.
But you see, actually, there might be 100 milliliters of that 300 that's going back and forth in the atrium. So we really don't have any data that tells us what that distribution is. One of the things that we might think about is, well, okay, as this pressure increases, what's going to happen to the volume, or what's going to happen to the walls of the atrium? They're going to get, what does that mean they're going to get? They're going to get stretched. So they're going to exhibit more recoil, and that's part of what you see here. But depending on what the compliance of that structure is, that will limit perhaps the amount of flow that can come in there. The other thing that you have is that you still have flow coming from the venous system. So maybe there's some, what do you think the pressure is doing during those periods in the vena cava? It's also increasing. How can that be? It's a closed system, and what else?
There's no valve.
There's no valve between the vena cava and the aorta. Okay. So we really don't know. We don't have a measurement here of really what the cardiac output is. We don't know really how much the flow is being put out. And in fact, this person could be exhibiting signs. They could have cold hands. They could have cold feet. They could have other signs of decreased circulation.
I think we do have signs that the same or roughly the same amount of blood is going out into the body because the pressure in the aorta is pretty close to what it was. It's slightly lower, so there might be slightly less blood going out. But by looking at the aortic pressure, the recoil is similar. You expect to see similar aortic pressure levels.
Well, except that a normal arterial pressure at that point, I expect to be about 120.
So, and I kind of tried to correct myself, saying it might be slightly lower, but you're seeing that there still is a fairly good amount of blood that's going out. Otherwise,
there's a good amount of blood that's going out. But what I was saying is that you can't quantitatively say half as well as you're. And that's really not Kelly tried to say. Kelly said arbitrarily, I'm going to decide that half is going out. And she said that because half the medium proportion. Okay? There he is.
Leaky valve syndrome.
This is mitral. What is prolapse? Like going backwards. What could one possible reason be? Now, judging, thinking about what happened, what you looked at in the heart, in your calf heart, what, if you recall that, what might have happened in that heart?
A deteriorated valve.
What do you mean a deteriorated valve?
For example, if you had oral surgery and a heart murmur, and your bacteria attached itself to the valve and ate away at it very slowly, you wouldn't notice that you were actually having a valve being deteriorated, and thus you get backflow into the heart. But don't worry, you can get them replaced.
Really?
You have two options. You have pig and
so that really didn't answer the question. But that's an interesting answer to the question because it illustrates something that if you're thinking mechanistically, you don't really have a problem yet. But if you're not thinking mechanistically, lots of times you do. Why did Miriam McCabe have a heart attack on the stage? Or Joseph of the Universe? Why did she have a heart attack? No, there could probably be one or two reasons. Loss of blood flow to the heart. So a blockage of the coronary arteries is one possibility. Another possibility is that she had a problem, a conduction problem. That's why she had a heart attack. That was the cause of the heart attack. Now you might ask the question, what led to that? I didn't have a heart attack because I was a diabetic and didn't pay any attention to it. I didn't have a heart attack because I didn't watch my cholesterol. I had a heart attack because the left anterior descending coronary artery clogged up with a plaque and with an embolus. So the cause of the heart attack is a blockage. Now you can ask yourself, what is it that could have led to that? And when you're thinking about a problem, you want to address the problem. And then you want to start moving outward from there. And we talked about this, I think, before, and I will tell you again and again and again. You're the Kenmore police officer coming to Juanita Drive and block away, and you see one car smashed into another. And you get out, and the first question you ask is everybody okay? And the second question you ask is,
what happened?
Okay? You didn't ask, you get enough sleep last night? You didn't ask, are you drinking?
How's your mom?
You didn't ask, are you on your cell phone? You didn't ask, are your brakes working? You ask, what happened? And you start going to those kinds of things. After you establish what happened, then you say, okay, what could have caused this? So the fact that you went to the dentist, had some oral surgery, did not have the greatest technique in the world, and the guy infected you. And you had some delivery of that to the heart valve, and they started eating away at the heart valve in some way. Doesn't really tell you what happened. If you think about the structure of that valve, what could have happened that would allow that valve to blow back?
Broken heart strings.
Broken heart
strings.
Zing went the strings of my heart?
Yep.
Okay. What is that? Cordae tendonitis. Could have some problem with the papillary muscle. Could have some problem with the cordae tendonitis. Then you might ask, how did it get to be that way? Oh, you know, I went to this car again.
What could be a cause of a parting of the atrium?
What could be a cause of a parting of the atrium? I don't know which
calcium.
Oh, loss of recoil. Yeah. Okay. What can I have a loss of recoil?
Membrane, and so it's put into the
what do you call it? What kind of tissue do you call it?
helpful.
Yeah, look at this world-class athlete here. And I will tell you that sometime in his life, he more than likely tripped and fell on his forehead. How do I know that? What kind of tissue can I find invading that or developing in that
connective tissue?
Don't
have a heart attack. You invite injuries to the end of the tissue. And then you just kind
of like vascularize
it to make it bone.
Oh, at the same time that the ventricle is contracted suggests to me that maybe some of that volume that's entering there is coming from the ventricle. Now, what she said, but the other thing that she said, though, which makes good sense, is that, okay, the valve is closed, the ventricle is contracted, but I'm still having flow from the vena cava. So, gee, you know, it makes sense to me that this should increase after that valve is closed. But if, in fact, you have this pressure in the atrium that's increasing, as it increases, not being pushed in there, as it increases, what's going to happen to the flow upstream? It's going to get stopped up. It's going to decrease. Okay? So, gee, if there was an increase in volume from the vena cava, then I have to increase the vena cava pressure at the same time. I don't have, there's no mechanism, there's no pump, there's no mechanism. Well, that makes sense? But the other thing she said, which is really good too, is that, okay, my explanation for this noise is that there's so much volume going out into the aorta compared to normal, and it's going so fast in that scenario, that there's turbulence, just as the normal opening of the valve. And that's plausible if in fact, that large amount of volume is going through a very, very short period. So the major key to tell me that it's not that hypothesis is how this increases very quickly at the same time as the energy. Okay?
You say the vena cava is
Oh, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
So what's Model's problem? Model's problem here is that we're talking about the left side in the left atrium, and we're going to see later on that for many cases here, I assume that the pulmonary vasculature is fine, and the right atrium is directly connected to the left atrium. Now we're going to see in cases of right heart failure that's not the case. But when we start talking about the whole heart as a pump, we start thinking about what is it that determines the cardiac output, we're going to get that. So you're absolutely right. We're not talking about the vena cava here. We're talking about the pulmonary veins dumping into the left atrium. Okay, Tim, are we going to go from there?
We have some class.
Yeah.
Sure.
It's been an hour.
Okay,
does it mean
you have another hour?
We have to have
another hour.
We have to have.
I don't know what you're hearing. No, but I said I needed to compare it to what was normal.
All right.
Oh, okay. Oh, because she's on the chair.
Okay. So I guess what I heard was we looked at relationships, one thing to another, and try to decide what was normal and not. So, what kind of questions did you ask when you said relationships?
We looked at the relationships of, like, which pressures increase together at the same time, which ones decrease normally at the same time, kind of which ones move together and how this differs from what we saw.
Okay, so you said these two are going up together at the same time, and that looks okay. Is that right?
Right. We're like, okay, well, that looks normal. And then we looked at, well, normally before and after contraction, the left atrium pressure and the left ventricle pressure seem to move together. And that isn't the case here. The left atrium
must.
So she says, let me first look here, and he says, those go up and down together, and so that looks okay. And then you look down here, and he said, that doesn't look okay. And does it not look okay because there's a little A wave there? Well, why doesn't it look okay?
The difference in the pressures.
Big difference in the pressures. There's a big difference here in the pressure between the atrium and the ventricle. So then what did you do?
We tried to figure out why the pressure in the atrium was so much higher than the pressure in the ventricle.
Okay? We tried to figure out how the atrial pressure could be high compared to the ventricle. And what did you do to answer that? Did everybody ask that same question?
Yes.
What was everybody asking? And how did you answer the question?
By drawing a picture.
By drawing a picture. Okay. And what did your picture have?
It had the atrium, the direction of the valve, the ventricle, the aorta, and the direction of that valve.
Like that. All right?
Yeah.
Okay. So, now I want you to pay attention to this, because this is very important. Because if you get some idea that you will also see when you do your remediation exercise about how valuable this little picture can be. So you said the pressure in here was a lot higher than the pressure in here. Where could the problem be?
The valve between the atrium and the ventricle.
If the pressure here was higher than the pressure here, where could the problem be? In between the two, right? And what's in between the two? The valve. Oh, okay. If that's the case, what do you think about the valve? What do you think is happening in the valve?
Excellent.
What do you think is happening in the valve that might explain this difference?
I think it's not opening all the way.
How many people have decided it's not opening all the way?
Sure. I think it works.
How many people decided something else? What did you decide? pressure increasing right here.
Right. The valve's closed.
Could that pressure in there going up be a result of the ventricle increasing in pressure?
No.
Is it done that?
That's
like a lesser.
It's
a plus of the difference.
Well, the valve's closed between the two, but what if the valve was regurgitating? What if it was a hole in the valve?
There would be noise.
What?
Well, not if it was a small hole.
Sounds say it isn't. Because if the ventricle is pushing and pushing back full of volume through a small opening, I would expect to hear something there. I don't. When do I hear something? I hear something over here when flow is going from the atrium.
That's what
I said.
Towards the end,
you
said it.
That you told me. And narrowed down. Make sense? So you see, it's not all that difficult. What you have to do is draw that sketch and say, where am I standing? What does the sketch tell me? And you're going to find, more times than not, that if you take what's in your head and you put it very simply on a piece of paper, there are two things that happen. One is you get to see what you're thinking. And you'd be surprised sometimes what you think. The other thing is when you look away and come back to that picture, it hasn't changed. Oh, when is this helpful? It's helpful on tests. I don't know if you've noticed or not, but it seems to me in all these years, and I don't quite understand, but in all these years of giving tests and stuff, there's a wealth of information on scene. Because I can look around the room and people are looking at this.
That's where you look to recall stuff. You look to the left. Up to the left, right? It's up to the left and up to the right either.
Either professional sports,
if you're creating
sports, events, or high school sports. Indoor. Basketball, volleyball, and you know where they have the commentators and stuff like that, where the sports folks and the officials, they're at that desk. And what's in front of that desk?
Sports players.
There's an ad in front of that desk, right? You know what I'm talking about? Well, what happens to that ad? You can see this on television too if you watch it on television. What happens to the ad?
It changes.
Every 4 or 5 minutes, it changes. Well, the same thing happens. And you can see these folks taking this exam, and they go down and they look up on the ceiling, God, it's not the same as it was before. I'm going to change my answer. And then they go again, and it's the same stuff as it was before. I'm going to change my answer back. And they go and do this. Oh, multiple. But those people who take that little time and make that little sketch on their paper, instead of looking at the ceiling, find out that when they come back to that question, the same picture is there. And they can either think, they can either reason it through again the way they did, or they can recognize the problem with the picture that they had, so they know there's a problem with what they were thinking about